From the shores of the Colorado River on the beautiful Parker Strip, you're listening to the Parker Livecast.
The recently elected sheriff of La Paz County, Bill Risen, is here. Good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
Recently promoted Captain Kurt Bagby. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Recently elected, this is the way I did it the other day.
Here.
Yeah, recently elected County District 2 Supervisor Deuce Miner, and recently appointed Interim County Administrator Robert Smith is here as well. How are you guys doing?
Thanks,
sir. Robert, nobody knows you, I don't think, so why don't you tell me a little bit about where you are, where you came from?
Wow, I've been enjoying the anonymity.
Yeah, that's over.
Yeah, I get it. Well, most recently I was the town manager in Chino Valley. I was there about 5 years, and before that I was down in Glendale. My background's in town management and the communications industry in the wireless communications sector.
Gotcha. And so you come here. How did that happen, Deuce? Through a system or through a there's an intermediary, or how does that work? How do you find a guy like Robert?
Right. We reached out to an agency that provides interim administration for governments, and they sent us a couple of resumes to look at, and the first one declined. We were able to look through the resumes, and then we were able to interview. We interviewed two candidates. I'm sure we could have asked for more if we wanted, but we interviewed two candidates, and Robert seemed to be just an excellent fit, not just for our community. I think, you know, coming from Chino Valley, he's got kind of the small town background in that respect, but particularly with his experience in dealing with situations like we find ourselves in currently and turning finances around. So that was a big factor for me, obviously, I think, in our decision.
Gotcha. And so you've been here for what, 3, 4, 5 weeks, more than that?
Yeah, this is my fifth week.
Fifth week now. So.
And, but who's counting?
But who's? I think Robert is.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because you came into a pretty specific situation. I mean, it certainly seems like it's a challenging situation. Do you look at it that way? Is it a challenge to you, like in a sort of professional way? I mean, I think I was at that meeting last week where you said, you know, that you're kind of enjoying taking it on in a way.
Well, it is challenging, but when you think about local governments, they last for lifetimes. I mean, the county will be here when we're all gone, and so scalar. This is a small bump in the road for the county, but it's not, you know, the end of the county. And so I always think about it as if it's just an operational problem. And, you know, my background, I've been in other towns across the U.S., and luck has just had it that I've been the guy that shows up when they're facing fairly large problems. So I at this point in my life and in my professional experience, it's doable. And it's not the end of everything. It's a transformation, and all communities go through them.
And I'm sure it helps to know that you've been, you know, kind of been there before. You've seen these kinds of situations before. Okay, and of course we know everybody else, but I guess maybe we could have a couple of words, Sheriff. I don't know what if you have anything that you can think. I mean, you're. How long are you into that term now? It's like, again, another...
Since January 1st.
Was it January 1st?
Yes, it was.
Wow. That's pretty quick.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So literally you're into your third month now.
Yep.
And,
sure.
Everything's going as expected?
It is very interesting. It's day by day. I will have to say I really enjoy working with Robert. Mm-hmm. He's gone out with us on several occasions into the community, down to the governor's office on highway safety. He's really a hands-on person, and I really enjoy having him here to assist us in the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
And for the sheriff's department to be able to assist the county.
Yeah, and it's interesting how that works. I think the public doesn't necessarily understand between the sheriff's department and the county. There's this kind of... It's like a Venn diagram, because it's kind of, it does go, it overlaps, but it's not the same entity exactly.
Correct.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of ways that funding, for example, you know, kind of things go in, things go out.
Well, you have elected officials, and then you have hired officials that work for the county, and it makes for an interesting way of doing things because, as you say, things overlap.
Yes.
And it depends on how well you get along together with everybody as to how productive and how well you do.
Excellent. Hey, very, very, very nice. Look at this. I get Starbucks.
That was a cute little delivery girl. Do you know her?
I didn't see her.
You should have tipped her. She might come back.
How's it going for you?
You know, it's listening when you asked Bill about how long has it been. All the newly elected officials for the county started January 1st. We were actually sworn in on the 3rd.
Well, that's what confused me, yeah.
Well, that was our ceremonial swearing in. We all had to sign our oath of office prior to the 1st because technically at midnight on the 31st, the new officials become the officials. Mm-hmm. More probably important in Bill's situation because if there's an emergency or something, he gets the phone call after midnight on the 31st. But I got to tell you, and I don't know what this sounds like when you're listening to it at home, but the truth of the matter is I have to remind myself that tomorrow will be the 3rd, so that'll be 2 months.
It seems like it's just flown by.
It feels like it's been 6 months.
Really?
Well, not because it's not flying by,
yeah.
But when I think about what we've been working on and things we've done and the moves that we've had to make and the thing, it feels, I think about, okay, well, we did that like a couple months. No, it's only been a couple months. So it couldn't have all happened 2 months ago.
That's crazy. Yeah, well, but, you've had a lot to kind of go through and work through.
Well, right. And I think it's no secret that my focus coming into this was the finances. But that doesn't diminish the importance of other issues that the constituents have. You know, the routine kind of issues that you hear about in this kind of position from your constituents, whether it's, you know, the roads or the dog barking at midnight. You know, you get the phone calls about all kinds of different things.
Yeah, so people elect you in, you know, you're their guy now, so they call you.
Right, which I'm good with that, and I do what I can. But you know, I clearly, and the good news is, I think we've done a good job so far of opening things up. I think, you know, a week ago Tuesday, the meeting that we held, I think enlightened a lot of people, and your article followed up and
was
great.
Most of the people that I talked to said that was unprecedented as far as they knew.
It
was unprecedented transparency, unprecedented, you know, look at the insides of those finances.
Right. And I think I'm glad we did it, and I think it's unfortunate that it's unprecedented. It should be the norm.
Right.
And I think that's the where we're headed now, to make that the norm. And so people understand. But because I think if people understand it better, I mean, I know it's not going to resolve everything for everybody, and people aren't going to be happy with every decision made. And again, that's part of the job. But hopefully, as we make decisions as the Board of Supervisors going forward, people will be more understanding of our decision, even if they're not happy with it, but they're going to understand it has to be made. Because now we've kind of set the parameters and said, okay, here's where we are. It's not a pretty picture currently. Okay. We're going to get out of it, but we're going to have to take steps to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess so we can get to that in a second and tell people where things are.
Sure.
Because I think a lot of people may not even have read yet. It's been in the paper and it's been on our site. And I think outside of that room, that's it. So, you know, we can do a good job of maybe setting things out right now this morning. Lieutenant Bagby is now, Captain Bagby, you're in a whole different building. I mean, I was with you guys yesterday, and it's weird seeing you over in that building because you were kind of over in your whole own situation. You have a completely different job now, don't you?
I can't hide anymore.
Yeah, right. People are coming looking for you.
Yeah, people stand in the office. And what did you think yesterday?
You know, so I went on a tour of the La Paz County Jail yesterday at the invitation of the sheriff.
Voluntarily? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Voluntarily. I was a voluntary visitor. It's like the Monopoly board when you're just visiting.
You know, get out of jail free card.
Yeah, that was me yesterday. No, I mean, it was very interesting. You guys have a whole operation over there that I think, and especially a jail, by the very nature of a jail, it's closed doors and big walls. And so people don't know what goes on in there. And I guess we'll get to that. But I maybe, Robert, you can tell us kind of what the situation is in a nutshell for people listening. Why are we describing this now? And I think it's the first time I've ever heard people at the county comfortable with using the word crisis to describe the finances of the county. Why are we comfortable doing that right now?
Well, we've got a problem that through the normal course of events we can't correct. And so the financial problem's large enough that we're going to have to take special action to correct it. If if corrective action had been issued years back, it wouldn't have been a big deal. It would have been the normal course of events.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everybody knows the county's kind of structured that it's going to have difficulties with its finances. There's just not that much private land here to generate a property tax for the county to operate on. So the county, the way it's built, has a minimized cash flow just starting out the gate. So that's a challenge for us that other counties don't have quite so much of.
Right. So the classic problem is we have less deeded land here,
yes,
which means we have less of a tax base of property taxpayers.
Right.
Yeah.
Which makes, I think, development, particularly economic development, even more important because, you know, what land we do have needs to be performing for our community.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the finances go, the general fund has had to support some things. And it's natural that at times you do subsidize programs because they're needed by the community. And sort of the Board of Supervisors will say, well, we get this grant to do this program, but we actually have more people in need, so we're going to throw some money at that so that we can serve more people who need the service. And that's totally appropriate. The problem is the cash flow, the incoming revenues haven't been there to offset all of those. And I don't think, you know, Deuce talked about transparency. I don't think that the Board of Supervisors has been involved closely with financial decisions, at least the full story of what's going on with the finances, mm-hmm, for some time.
Mm-hmm.
So really our goal is to, open it up and let anybody know what's going on.
In the past, I mean, DL and Holly aren't here, District 1 and District 3 supervisors who you joined, Deuce, on,
correct,
the board. They're not here, so I can't ask them, you know, what they would get in the past or what they wouldn't. But I suppose they're getting summaries or they're getting, but they're not getting the full picture. Or they weren't.
Well, there is a full story to every decision that has to be made. And there's always a proponent of the decision who brings it forward to the board to say this is something that we need. But those issues should float through pretty much the entire organization for additional information to be added to that. So when the board reads that issue, they understand the full cost or the full impact of the decision that's being made. And most decisions have an immediate impact, but then there's a sustainability issue. If we're going to do this and we're going to do this for the next 20 years or whatever, what's the true cost of providing that to the county? And can we afford to sustain that thing that we just decided that we wanted to do?
Yeah.
So we're trying to provide that kind of intelligence to the packet so the board fully understands what they're getting into when they're making those kinds of decisions.
Yeah, or little things like one of the things you guys mentioned was that sometimes grants would come and someone would say, well, we were approved for this grant, but that money somehow never... What was the situation with some of those special revenue,
right,
funds and that sort of thing?
Well, there needs to be a tighter linkage between the finance department and the departments that are actually providing services, because the finance department can help those service missions go after those funds. So if there's a grant program and the county is providing the upfront money for that program to go and you're getting reimbursed by the state or whoever, if you're not filing all of the things that are necessary to get those monies back, the county winds up in the red on that
right,
program.
Right.
And finance can help with that. They just haven't been tightly linked to the departments for a while.
Or as I understand it, Deuce, you're from the grant world.
Yep.
I guess, Kurt, you're from the grant world too in a lot of ways, in the sense of like things that you guys have been doing in the past number of years. And grants come with conditions, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, sometimes those conditions are, hey, you know, you've got to match this amount after this many years, or you've got, you know, after 2 years, this happens, or after 3 years, this happens. And sometimes that information might not be presented to the board, I would imagine, by someone who really wants that grant, really wants that money.
Right. And that's where our job comes in, too, in asking questions, you know, to try and, you know, bore down on some of those things so that we do have a better understanding. But, you know, Robert mentioned reimbursement. You mentioned that I've worked with grants. Yeah, I mean, it's critical. To me, it's not really a grant until we get the reimbursement, because you heard Robert say that we fund that with general fund dollars and then we get reimbursed. But if we don't apply for the reimbursement, it's really not a grant. It was just a general fund expenditure because the money never came back in.
Yeah.
So it's pretty critical that when we follow those things through to the end.
Right. Right. Yeah, I guess that's a whole other area. But is that the main reason why we're in? And what is the number? I mean, what do we need to get to be back where we need to be?
Well, when you look at it, there is a rough number in terms of how much has been taken out of the general fund that needs to come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have one enterprise take money away from the general fund, eventually that needs to be paid back. There's somewhere around $10, $11 million that have been pulled out of the general fund over the years. And the reason why we're really seeing that now is at one point, the general fund had a little over $9 million of reserve funds sitting in it
mm-hmm.
for a rainy day or a bad season. And over the course of time, that's been whittled down to basically zero. And so, you know, like you have money in the cookie jar for, you know, the tough week. We don't have any money left in the cookie jar. So,
yeah,
we've got to figure out a way to put that back. But I like what you said there, because there's more to it than just the financial picture. There's an investment in software and technology that needs to occur in the county so that the work can be more effectively done by fewer people. And then organizationally, the layout of the county, where everything's at, what services we're providing where, we need to take a look at, you know, are we doing this efficiently? Are we using the public's dollar to its best effect?
Mm-hmm.
So there's more to it than just this financial picture.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the reason I went to the jail yesterday was because that's a part of this story, right? That the jail, what, since about 2011 or 2012, I think I saw, has, I guess, how would you say it? There are actually two ways that I can think to say what happened that are actually maybe tell the story in a different way.
Well, my description of it would be there was a time when immigration was generating incarcerations and the jail was financed and built on a particular financial model that counted on the county receiving a certain number of prisoners over a certain period of time to create cash flow.
From the federal government.
Yeah, and what happened was the federal government stopped incarcerating people, so the prisoners weren't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had one financial model, and then we were stuck in a different financial reality. And so we're hopeful that with what we see going on at the Fed, that'll change, and in the near future we'll have the prisoners like we thought we would back when the jail was created.
But in the meantime, it sounds like around $4 million is sort of general fund money that went to the jail.
Well, you're correct there. And I would say this, in order for the jail to operate, in order for us to have our own prisoners in the jail, there has to be a certain critical mass of people operating the facility. You can't just scale it all the way back and dial it down. There's a certain number of people that are required to operate that facility.
Mm-hmm.
And so no matter whether you have 2 or 200 prisoners, there is a core number of people that you've just got to have.
Yeah, no doubt. We were walking around yesterday, and if anything, it seemed like you guys were operating, Bill, at the minimum of what you need, right?
We are. And you have to remember that the sheriff's department or the sheriff has a mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those mandates is we provide a jail facility to the county. So it's something that
you have to.
We have to. And if you stop and think about it, if we shut down the jail today, what do we do with the prisoners that have to go to Quartzsite Magistrate or to the Justice of the Peace in Quartzsite or the Siloam Justice Court or the Parker Justice Court or the Parker Magistrates Court or the Superior Court?
Well, yeah, some of those inmates have to go out weekly, don't they? I mean, Monday mornings, there's a full busload going.
All day long.
Yeah, all day long.
Let me add this. So
yes.
You talked about having a $8 or $9 million, you know, kind of set aside for a lot of that was due to the federal inmates in the jail.
So this reserve is built up over time because the jail is essentially
it's a turning
profit.
Here's the thing that people don't understand. Not only the sheriff just mentioned, not only is the jail is mandated for us to have a jail, but it's mandated for the county to support. Every county supports the jail. our jail was built a little bit bigger so that hopefully if times were going in a certain direction, then we could hold inmates and make money off of it. Mm-hmm. But we still have to have a jail. The only difference is if we had a smaller jail, we would not have the option of bringing in inmates to make money. So a lot of the padding, a lot of the extra money the county had in 2004, 5, 6 in those areas is because of the money the county was bringing in through the jail system.
Yeah.
So now we're in a little bit of a lull. The administration the last 8 years was counterproductive, at least in that area.
Yeah. So just so people know, you know, yesterday, and just because I know that it from the outside, it can be hard to imagine, this jail is built. I even changed my mind on how I thought about it from the second that I talked to the jail commander yesterday to the second I was leaving. And that was because in my mind, I asked him what the capacity is. And he says, well, I can hold almost 300 inmates here. And I said, well, how many do you have right now? And he checked his rolls and he said, oh, it's about 70 right now. I go, oh, so it's mostly empty. Well, that's completely wrong. When you walk through the jail, you go, actually, no, it's the way it's laid out. You still have to house people in a certain way. Those pods are very smart because you can keep females separate from males. You can keep more dangerous inmates separate from, right? Am I getting this right?
You're right.
From people who maybe like, let's say I drove on a suspended license and I got thrown in jail. You're not going to want to put me with Bubba.
You categorize inmates. You don't want to put a weaker inmate with an inmate who's more criminalized, and you don't want to get people more. You don't want more victims while they're in our system.
Right. Right.
And it's set up like a wagon wheel where you have our center pod in the center, our center control station, and they can look in full 360.
Yes.
And they can see each pod that's set up like a slice of a pie.
Very smart system, and I'm going to write a whole piece on Parker Live just about that jail, just so people know what we're dealing with. So the point is, you know, if people think, oh, you could shut down part of the jail or like half the jail, it doesn't work that way, as far as I can tell.
It wouldn't even be very cost effective. That's not what the thing is you have to give inmates medical. Mm-hmm. There's medical costs, there's transportation costs, there's food.
Right.
But the size of the jail isn't, can be a little bit of a power issue, I suppose, but that's not the big factor that's hurting us. Just the fact that jail hurts every county, but other counties have more property tax, more other tax bases to support it, and it doesn't hurt the county as much as ours hurts. But ours, just as much as ours hurts us, ours can help us.
Yeah.
And in March, they talked about the feds are opening up their budget for this new system as far as the ICE holds, and then they're going to call us.
ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
You got it down.
Okay.
And they are going to be letting us know what kind of budget they're looking at, and then hopefully that's when we start bringing inmates into the jail.
That would be good. I mean, and Sheriff, you've been talking to people. I guess what's your likelihood on getting those inmates back? Can you even say?
We're very hopeful. I won't say, yeah, we're going to get them. They'll be here on such and such a date.
Yeah.
We are preparing to receive them. Mm-hmm. And what we have done is prepared that we have 300 beds ready for them. And when they call, we'll say, bring the bus or we'll come down and get them either way, but we're set to go. I don't want to tell them, oh, yeah, in 90 days, we'll be ready to accept them.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to want to deal with us. So we are set up and ready to go. And in talking with ICE and Border Patrol and all the other organizations, they all understand about our jail. We have a good reputation of a clean, safe jail.
Yeah.
A jail that provides the services that are necessary.
Well, and yesterday your jail commander seemed very confident in his facility. He said, you know, like, hey, this is a really good, in fact, he might have even said to me, like, this is one of the best in Arizona. Like, it's a very good jail.
Yes, we have been told. When we had an inspection out of Yuma sector, they came up and inspected our jail. They said, we have no problem with you. You're our best jail that we have.
Sets it up great for what you want to do, which is essentially renting out those cells, if you really think about it, right?
Absolutely.
It's renting them out for money and saying, hey, here's a moneymaker. But you, as a county supervisor, Deuce, don't you look at that and go, hey, this is a business almost separate from the cost of the jail, because the cost of the jail you have to have, it sounds like, by statute, it's a necessary thing. So it's an expense. It's like someone with a cell phone, you know, and that's their monthly expenditure. They know they've got it. If they can find some business to do that's going to offset the cost of that, great. but that's an expense that they're going to have one way or the other.
And as captain, is it?
Whatever, private. You can call me whatever you want.
As Kirk said,
Kirk,
it was the jail was built with the federal inmates in mind. So, you know, not having that business is difficult. I mean, if the Hampton Inn that's going to open here in another month or two, right,
mm-hmm.
with what do they got, 200 rooms. Well, you know, they built that based on demographics and things that they've looked at, and they've determined they can keep that many rooms filled for a business. You know, if all the hotels around here had really poor occupancy rates, they wouldn't have built that.
Right.
And if something happens and they can only put 10 people a night in that hotel, they're not going to do well.
No.
And they wouldn't have built that if they didn't expect the full, right? Because the jail is similar.
Definitely.
It was built with a plan in mind.
The difference, though, would be arguably that the Hampton Inn, you could say, by statute has to exist. You know, maybe you wouldn't have built it as big, but you still have your, you know, your payments to make on a monthly basis to go out to do it. Is that, I mean, is that the way you guys look at it? Is that a good way to look at it? I don't really know how people should think about that jail. Should they think of it as this is something that we absolutely 100% need to offset, and if it's not being offset by those federal prisoners, then we got to do something really, really different? Or is it an expense, guaranteed expense, that if you can do something to make some money with it, is a bonus, is good, is something sort of a rare area of revenue for the county, because county doesn't have that many streams of revenue?
But I would say this, the county's a creature of the state,
mm-hmm.
and statutorily the county's mandated to provide certain services to the people who live here. And so the jail is a statutory requirement. You know, it may be that if you only have two cells in your jail and it's too small, you're shipping prisoners out and having to pay for somebody else to house those prisoners. Mm-hmm. But
transportation back and forth and everything that comes with that.
Yeah. And so I think part of it too, you know, we are behind the eight ball when it comes to revenues. And so the county's always had to kind of scrap to be able to make ends meet. But there are some realities today that are far different than they were in 1983 when the county was created. And more has been put on the backs of the counties to provide by the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this recent recession, you see the state backing away from some of its support. And so that has finally reached a critical mass here in La Paz. And we have to find a different way to go about delivering all those services because of the limited revenue picture that we have right now.
Yeah. So obviously you guys would be very, very happy if those inmates came back.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That would solve a lot right there, wouldn't it? But what else do we need to do? I mean, obviously it's not the whole answer. Even if those inmates can come back, we have other things going on.
Well, there's a level of organization within the county that has never emerged yet. I mean, capital improvement planning, capital asset management, things that you're looking further and longer term out to plan for the expenses that you know that you're going to realize or experience, and just funding the depreciation on the assets that the county has not been occurring. So the general fund reserve is important, and that was that $9 million figure I threw out there.
Yeah.
And there are some red numbers that need to be cleaned up, but there's also this investment in the organization. We need things like document management. You know, you wouldn't believe how much paper comes through our organization, and we don't have a way yet or a database yet to help us manage all of those agreements and responsibilities and...
I mean, it sounds like you come in, you look at it, and you go, oh, we need computers. Like, we need a much more IT-based organization.
Well, people need help. They need tools to be able to deal with today's workload because it is vastly different than it was in the 80s.
These special revenue funds, your presentation went quite a way down through some of these things and spelled out a lot of kind of where they are. And there are things like the health department at something like $800,000 negative and you know, these different numbers that were thrown out. Monsoon emergency fund, you know, things that people don't even know exist, but they're part of the operations, different programs and things that are going on. I suppose in a way, again, like with the jail, you guys have to decide how many of these things by design need to come from elsewhere, need to be funded by themselves, and how many of them are on us as a county, and that general fund has to reimburse those things. And I understand that some of those transfers weren't happening, so that...
And that's correct, and we don't have perfect information at any one given time. So, you know, you saw all those numbers and all those lines well before we had forensically gone in to determine exactly right. where they stood.
And I got you.
We're now looking back at those. We're churning through those lines now. We're finding that those negative numbers stretch back 5, 6, 7 years of accumulation. And in some of them, it's...
But why does that happen?
Well, in some of them, it was the fact that the transfers were never recorded. So the money was supposed to be transferred out of the general fund. The program was legitimately run. It was legitimately handled. The Board of Supervisors voted for the general fund to prop that program up, and that transfer in back into the general fund so the program would be in the black mm-hmm. didn't occur. And so, well, the health department's a great example there. That big red number was transfers that were never recorded. And so
explain that a little bit more in layman's terms. Well, what does okay. that mean? Is there an actual account that's in the red or no?
It's not. Well, some of them are, some of them aren't. Some of them are grants that we need to go after and try to get the money back. Uh-huh. Some of them are too old, we can't do it. But a good example would be one of the healthcare programs from the health department. Let's say they come to the Board of Supervisors and they say, we want to provide this service to the community. Here's mm-hmm. the grant that we have. Here's what it's going to take in terms of match mm-hmm. or additional funding to make that program happen. Can we go do this? And the board would say yes. And so they would go about their business doing their thing, getting their money back from the grant, and they would need additional money from the general fund, and it would be pulled out. But at the end of the year, the transfer wouldn't be recorded.
From the general fund.
Into the program.
To the program.
So at the end of the year, the program shows that it's in the red when it shouldn't be. And the general fund is showing in the black.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're in the middle of doing is catching all that up.
Yeah.
And creating the balance for us to start from.
Reconciling
yes.
everything.
Yes.
And so you may end up at the end of this process with a very different number in a lot of ways that you need to offset?
Well, no. If you look at just cash, mm-hmm. cash in the organization, we're still $9 to $10 million down because that general fund reserve balance has been depleted from nine-something to zero.
And $9 million, what you're saying, Kurt, was a lot of that maybe is because of additional revenues from the jail.
Look at the timing.
Uh-huh.
You know, that money, we don't have a lot of revenue in the county. A lot of revenue, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars a month was coming in through the county. My number's not exact, but it yeah. was something to that effect. Mm-hmm. Was coming into the county through that jail. It didn't go back to the sheriff's office. You know, it wasn't coming back where we were spending it. It was staying. And so that accounted for a lot of the county's money at the time.
Right. And so are you saying, I mean, there's one way to think about this, Deuce, which is like, if you say, $9 million, that's where we'd like to be in terms of reserve funds or whatever, or enough for cash flow. But is that what you need, or is that what you want?
Well, I don't know if there's an actual number you could say that is the minimum or maximum number you need to have in reserve. I guess you could determine a percentage, but...
Because, I mean, one of the issues, and maybe we can go there first because it'll help explain that, is sometimes people are not being paid, right? Where there are people calling and saying, hey, we did business with you guys and you haven't paid us yet.
Correct.
Because of cash flow, right?
Correct. So to the point of reserve, and every business has their own ideas. I think the town of Parker, I don't remember, I was at their meeting the other night, and I think that they're somewhere around 25% of their budget they hold in contingency, which to me is kind of like your reserve, because that's the money they're just setting aside.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to speak for them. I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head. But I can tell you at Pace, which is now a 22-year-old organization, much smaller in scale, but same concepts, you know, our goal there, and it took us a long time to do it, but our goal there was always to have a reserve of 1 year's operating costs, because we lived on grants, and a grant can come and they go away. Mm-hmm. And so we always wanted to be in a position where when a grant went away, we continue operating until we find new funding. So I think in the county situation, you know, our overall budget, I think, is like around $30 million.
A year.
A year. And a small part of that, by the way, percentage-wise, comes from property tax. Mm-hmm. Most of that, by far, comes from other funding sources. You know, state shared revenues, different things like that. But I think it would be, I think it would be wise for the county to get to a point where we have at least 25 or 30% of our annual budget held in reserve.
Okay. You sound like you agree with that, Robert.
If I could chime in.
Yeah.
25 to 30% is the best practice. And it's even more important that the county ensure that that reserve is in place, because our revenues do not come in on a steady basis. But our expenses,
they're irregular.
Yes. And our expenses, though, are going out on a regular basis. So you may get a small percentage of your revenues in the first 6 months. And if you don't have that reserve to lean upon to pull to be paying your bills, you don't have enough cash flow to make it all work. And that's where we're at right now. That reserve is gone. It's been spent for operations. And we don't have the funds to reach back into and supplement.
How much is payroll every month?
Payroll is about $650,000, $670,000 per pay period.
Okay.
So payroll is about $1.2, $1.4 million a month.
A month. And it sounds like, you know, they were having panicky moments at certain times trying to meet the payroll with the cash flow that they had and all that kind of stuff, and sort of dipping into credit line and that sort of thing sometimes.
They did create a line of credit because the reserves were gone and they needed to draw from somewhere.
Now, I have heard it said that that $1 million line of credit that the county has isn't enough for a county like the size of La Paz County, or that essentially, like, it was created years and years ago, and, you know, that's we need a bigger line of credit, and that's the problem.
Well, what we really need is a bigger reserve, and we
should. Deuce doesn't like that.
Yeah. No, I like the reserve. I don't like the line of credit.
Yeah, you don't like the line of credit.
No.
We shouldn't be using a line of credit.
No.
And the line of credit really wasn't created that long ago.
Only a couple years ago.
Right.
They went from 500,000 up
to a million.
And then they went to 1.5, and then they came back to a million.
And as I understand it, recently, or as recently as a couple weeks ago, it was about half of that was used or something like that.
Yeah, they were periodically chipping into that, and then they would replenish it because of the cash flow issue. And really, we should have those reserves on hand. You know, you head into another recession, you know, out of a $30 million budget, you know, 30%, a third.
Yeah.
You're going to need that to make it through a multi-year recession to supplement your
And this
operation.
This is going to sound like a completely ignorant question, but Bill, is your budget a separate budget like that, or I'm just not even sure how linked these finances are. Does the sheriff's office have its own separate budget and separate kind of accounts and all of that?
We have our separate budget that is part of the county budget.
Mm-hmm.
Just if that makes sense.
It's an extension.
It doesn't make
it's
sense.
It's like a tree.
It's like a
we
department.
Have our own branch.
It's like a department in the county.
Yeah. But I'm coming from the point of view, like our listeners, of having my own checking account and figuring out, you know, what's in that checking account. That's what I have. I maybe have another account.
And to that point, every department has a budget.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're coming up to that time. The cities are coming up to that time. It's that time of year. It's budget time where they'll be.
So sheriff's budget will be part of that, that budgeting. But essentially, it's a ledger. It's what we're going to do. It's not like It's not completely separate accounts.
But that's one of the things Brandon talked about during the meeting was just because there's a budget, and we might have 500,000, let's just say, in one area of our budget, doesn't mean that there's that much money in there. You know, I've got an extra 5,000 right now in training I could spend, but I can't spend it.
And not only is that not true, but it could be the other problem. Like, you could go over budget and...
Well, and that's where we have to be so careful right now. And one of the things I want to make sure it gets out to the people listening. You know, the situation that the county finds itself in is not there are folks out there that are looking for a pound of flesh. And I get that. I mean, I'm not happy about it either. the situation that we're in. But the frontline people working for La Paz County
and Bill both ran talking about the finances of the county. Bill talking about the finances with the sheriff's office.
Right.
You talking about the finances of La Paz County. And that was why you ran for, I mean, it was one of the reasons why you were running.
That was a big reason. But the point I wanted to make is the frontline people working for La Paz County are not, they're not the problem. And it worries me that people, you know, they want to take shots at the folks that they walk up to the counter and see, because that's the face of the county when they walk in. But those aren't the folks that we should be looking at. Because the county employees are, you know, they're dedicated people. They work hard every day. It's not the highest paying jobs in the world, but, you know, so we're lucky to have folks working with us. And unfortunately, we're going to have to go through some change to get our financial house in order.
Yeah. I want to get to that because I want to ask you about things like furloughs, which have been mentioned, as a possibility. Is that something that, I mean, it sounds like those are the sorts of uncomfortable decisions that are kind of like last resort things, but what are your guys' take on things like furloughs? It doesn't sound like, I mean, if I were a county employee, I wouldn't be feeling real good right now. And do you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's clear that something has to change because what we're doing right now doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Deuce mentioned we're heading into the budget season. I think the budget process needs to change a little bit. We spend a lot of time focusing on expenditures, but we should spend as much time focusing on revenues. And the board needs the intelligence every time that they meet to understand where we are financially, particularly now that we're facing some changes. And so any time that the revenues aren't coming in the way we thought that they would, we need to adjust our spending. Any time that spending's going past where we thought it would go, we need to take a look at that and make sure we're not headed into difficult territory.
Yeah.
So the budget's a big deal. In terms of corrective actions, we've been meeting with the departments one-on-one all week. We'll meet with the rest of them this coming week to solicit ideas from the departments on what can we do to make things better.
Where could they cut or what could...
Well, it's do we need to cut things? Are there better ways that things could be organized? Could we be sharing resources or people? Is there an investment in hardware or technology that would allow the department to run more effectively? It's not just cutting. There's a need in the system.
Efficiency.
Right. And so we're gathering these ideas. We're going to put numbers to those and see where that takes us.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't get us all the way to fixing the gap, then there will have to be more. I don't know what that will be. We will try to do our dead level best to do the most painful things last. But there's more to it than just the financial number that is a gap that we need to cover that's red. There's the investment in personnel. You know, Deuce mentioned that people don't make a lot in the county. The fact is we're not making market wages here. And so it's hard to hold people here and keep them because you're not paying enough. So we need to go through an analysis and determine really what should we be paying people and then get on that program. And it may take us 3 or 4 years to finally get the thing fully deployed, but we have to start somewhere.
And it sounds like you're saying, reading between the lines, it sounds like you're saying, hey, if someone in a year and a half or 2 years or something leaves, one way of maybe doing this is not to replace them and to invest in the people who are still there or something like that.
Well, we may have to look at that. You know, I don't know that the organizational layout of people is optimal for all the departments.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to go through the exercise to talk to the departments and see. We may be able to secure some additional space and not have to rent some properties to do some things in. We may be able to put some departments with others so we don't necessarily have to have so many admin support. I don't know. The departments have to tell us.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are doing the work and know it better than we do.
But certainly the taxpayer, I think, likes the idea of an efficient
mm-hmm.
operation. I've always thought of La Paz County for years and years and years as being a relatively lean organization already, mm-hmm. you know.
I would say that's true.
And so it's hard for you guys. I mean, you're coming in to something that's already not there's not a lot of areas of obvious fat to cut. And so it's tough. Did you, Sheriff, when you came in, did you see sort of areas that in your department that you could immediately say, oh, I don't know why we're doing that, or not so much?
As a matter of fact, yes.
Yeah.
We have gone over a lot of things within the Sheriff's Department saying, why in the world are we doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And what really upsets the captain's eye is when they say, because we've always done it that way.
That's why I was putting these on, because I'm going to start ranting.
You're on, Captain.
No, have at it, sir.
But that's
Kurt never gives that answer, though.
That's not an excuse, because we've always done it that way. Well, there's new ways, there's better ways, there's more efficient ways. There are more computer softwares, things that we can change that
You were telling me about one of those the other day.
Yes, we have a system. Our dispatch system. Mm-hmm. It's like we bought a Chevy Nova, but we want a nice big Chevy, a Tahoe.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is put a Tahoe mirror on it and Tahoe tires on it and a Tahoe engine on it, but we still got a Chevy Nova, and it doesn't work. And that's what we have done. We buy the cheapest thing possible, but it really doesn't fit our needs. We have trouble getting reports done on time because we have a great system. The Spillman system is neat. It can do all kinds of things. But they print out a copy of what the report should look like, and we handwrite it rather than do it on the computer.
Yeah, that's a classic thing with IT, isn't it? Where you know, it can do 100 things, and you do 16 things that you're comfortable with it because it was what you did before. Yeah.
It's like playing solitaire on a computer, and that's all you use it for.
Right.
So as Mr. Smith was saying, sometimes the software helps. We just spent $135,000, but it wasn't taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. It was RICO funds, which is federal asset sharing money or state asset sharing money.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't come from anything here in the locally. But the reason we did it is because, like the sheriff was saying, there's so many ineffective ways that we were doing things. We're running driving paperwork back and forth around the county. The dispatchers are. You know, we're at this new system that we're putting in. It's actually the system we have with the new updates, the $130,000 update, actually makes them more effective, for we don't have to use as many dispatchers. So exactly what you were saying a few moments ago, being effective and catching up to where we should be in the 21st century is not where we were. And it's been pretty archaic.
Well, even at this radio station, there used to be like 10 employees or something like that. And we're down to 3, you know? Doing the same amount of stuff, really, just with different tools. So yeah, I guess a lot of that is true. But I did have a question for you guys about employee morale, because I think morale is chronically underappreciated as a value and chronically underinvested in, and people don't take it seriously. They don't see it as like a bank account. You know, this is a real quantity that we need to pay attention to and invest in. And right now, arguably, you know, all this news and, you know, those county employees are looking at my article and you know, it spells it out in some pretty blunt terms. They can't feel good about or maybe you can correct me, maybe they do. But it seems to me like they can't feel awesome about the situation the county is in, and therefore that kind of, they're wondering, how does that affect me?
I'm going to say that I don't know if this is true at every level, but what I heard following the election, and I think Sheriff Risen may have heard some of the same comments, there was comments like, for the first time, they feel like they have hope.
Okay, that's good.
And I say that, you know, the county employees, your article was written very well. I don't think it was a surprise to a lot of county employees.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've had a sense. They've known. This isn't the first time there's been a question about, you know, is payroll going to clear?
Yeah.
There's a newspaper article I found from a few years ago where there was an issue with that long ago. But I
remember that, too.
I think the county employees as a whole right now see it. And I can tell you, I also toured the jail, and I sat in on the meeting after the inspection of the jail when they had a consultant come in and look at their jail operations. And the attitude of the they were some of the jail leadership that sheriff had in the meeting, super, super supportive. And what can we do?
Yeah.
And in that meeting, those two individuals that were in that meeting both took on new responsibility right there and there with no additional compensation. They want to see it work. So
right, right.
I think that's a good thing. I'm sure there's some people that aren't completely happy with the county. That's always going to be the case. But I think the employees have hope, and I hope we don't disappoint them. Again, there's going to be probably some pain along the way, but we want to minimize that. And
they understand, fundamentally, they understand probably that this is not...
It is.
Yeah.
The anecdotal story I want to share with you is just yesterday we had, well, they're doing it today, I believe, as well, but yesterday was the first day of our annual, or of our, one of our semi-annual or whatever health checkups, where the county employees, as part of their health coverage, they come in, they draw blood, and then they get their cholesterol and all that fun stuff. I was in there doing that, and the nurse that was taking my blood pressure made a comment. Well, she said, oh, she goes, are you with the county or the town? Because the town does the same thing. And I said, I'm with the county. Oh, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm one of the supervisors. Oh, she goes, well, I'm going to tell you, your employees are so happy. They all seem to just love their jobs. She goes,
that's cool.
And I was like, thanks for saying that.
That's good.
But
that's good.
That was somebody from outside dealing with folks coming through a line and made that comment. Now, what that's worth, I don't know.
And I definitely had the same vibe at the jail. You know, I talked to the commander over there, and at the end, I asked him the same question. I said, how are these guys feeling? You can't pay them what you would want to pay them. And he said, I know. And I said, so your opportunities, you don't have all the tools in the box that you might want to have as an employer. As their superior, because you want to be able to reward, you know, people who are really good and all of that kind of stuff. And he goes, you know, we're pulling all the other tools out, is what he kind of said.
We're using wrenches to pound nails.
Yeah, yeah.
We're using all the, you know, a tool will do.
Yeah,
that explains a lot. Now it's all making sense.
It's pretty clear.
I can say after the meeting we had at the supervisor's offices, that was a depressing meeting. I mean, you can't say it wasn't depressing. We got back to the sheriff's department, and my employees were coming up saying, we're going to save the county. We want to save the county.
Yeah.
We're going to do it. We're going to be the savior of the county.
Yeah.
And I mean, those are the people that have worked day in and day out. They're underpaid. They're working their hearts out. And all they want to do is save the county. They want to be the ones to be able to say, we pulled you out, guys. Now, as far as the actual morale... I'll let Kurt talk to that, what he sees as the morale.
What do you see as the morale, Kurt? Free speech zone.
Well, some days I'm in the fetal position crying in a corner. No, everything's great. Everybody, I can't even, when you walked around the jail, people were doing their job.
I made a point of talking to them. I wanted to know, you know, how's it going, you know, and they did seem like they were well placed in the jobs that they're doing and that they seemed content.
Yep. You're never going to have
motivated.
You can
motivated.
Take people aside, and you're never going to have a perfect society or a perfect workplace. I mean, there's always going to be people that,
of course,
if you open that Pandora's box, they're going to start talking about things. But
yeah,
if you try to please everybody in that regard, then nothing's going to work right. Mm-hmm. Everything's just going to go spiraling off. So you just try to stick with what we can do. Stick with our goals and objectives.
Yeah, I think of that. I think of the one young man. There's a lot of younger employees in
there. They look younger than you.
They do. In that
and
jail.
And they are.
How old are in their 20s, most of them,
I
right?
We got a 19-year-old in there, don't we?
We've got a few.
And so I talked to a young man who was in the control tower, and I said to him, do you like being in the control tower? Because it can be a long time, you know, you're that guy. I mean, for people who have never seen it, every door, you're responsible for whether it's locked or open. Every officer that's in that facility, you need to know where they are. Every inmate, you need to know where they are. I mean, you're the guy. If something goes wrong, it's on you.
Looks like you're in the space shuttle kind of.
It does.
I mean,
it's very claustrophobic.
It's dark. It's, you know, you're surrounded by monitors. And I asked him, how do you like being in the tower? And he said, yeah, it's not bad. He says, I don't mind it. I said, is it your favorite thing? Or is it, no, my favorite thing is doing the, He does like some of those court runs, you know, to run inmates to court, and
he'll
stand in the courtroom while the judge talks to him and that sort of thing. He likes that a lot. So, I mean, it wasn't like they couldn't identify, here are things that I really like about my job, you know, and so that's really good. And so I think you probably do have, especially right now, this is probably a moment for all you guys where in leadership at the county, where this is a time to... take advantage probably of some good employee goodwill, right? And kind of like, hey, we got some new leaders and we're pretty excited to get this thing, to see this thing through.
Well, one of the things I noticed after Tuesday, was almost a sense of relief. I mean, it's like everybody has suspected that there were issues. Mm-hmm. And it's like imaginations are kind of running wild, but you drag it out in the light of day and you put it in front of everybody. And then I think there's a sense of expectation of, okay, we need to fix this, and let's fix the whole thing. Let's not fix part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you look at pay and how do you motivate employees and morale, the compensation's got to come. At some point, we've got to grow up and be able to pay people what the market is,
right,
in order to retain them and have good talent here. So,
and I think it's sometimes like, you know, if you can't do it right now, at least you're telling them we're on the path
and creating the plan and the work and the time frame to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
That way the employees then have the hope, you know, that we'll follow through and do the work.
Yeah.
But you have people that there aren't too many jobs in the county where you're just sitting doing one menial task and not just answering a phone.
Everybody
receives training. Everybody gets trained in whatever their position is. And sometimes the training is really expensive. So like they're saying, at times you got to talk about the quality quantity comparison. Like if you keep training and losing people and then having to retrain, sometimes it may be a little cheaper to bring the pay up,
mm-hmm.
retain the people, keep them well trained, keep them there, keep them happy, as opposed to...
Yeah.
Well, and organically growing the talents that you do have, you know, the folks that are here are dedicated and they really care about what they're doing. So if you're able to train and provide educational opportunities for certification and things like that, they can take on more responsibility and move out of one grade into another.
We have an investment in our people, mm-hmm. our employees, and it's a heck of an investment, a lot of money invested in them. And we have to be careful how we treat them. We have to be careful. Not everybody is working just because of money. There's other things that we can give them to inspire them, to make it more fun. I know at the Sheriff's Department, we got kids coming in all the time now that belong to the deputies. We're putting up deputy pictures on the walls. We've got a wall that's dedicated to the families of the deputies. We want them to be all part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And they love it. They'd like to be part of the family. It's brothers and sisters.
Is this a... I mean, it sounds like you guys have a lot of optimism. Is this a... How steep of a climb is this?
We're not going to get to the top of the mountain tomorrow. I mean, it's going to take some work. But I think, I know I'm very optimistic because I recognize that this problem, it didn't happen overnight. And again, I'm trying to figure out how to say it in a positive light. But I mean, there's been a lack of proper management or attention to the details. You know, you've heard Robert, he just pops them off the top of his head because that's his background. The things that we need to be looking at that we haven't been looking at for all these years. So I feel like because we've now identified it, we've put it in front of people, now we can start to turn it around. It's not going to happen overnight, and we're going to have to put a plan in place, and we're going to make changes and do things differently. But I really feel like we should be able to come out of this and do a much better job for the taxpayers. You know, the other thing that we're talking a lot about, some negative things. There's some positive things going on in the county. Economic development is doing quite well for the size of our county. When you look at Rose Acre Farms out there, that's a big thing for our county. And, you know, they've started on the second farm now. So that's a huge investment that will benefit the tax base of our county.
I think people get fed up hearing about Rose Acre Farms, but it is true that when you have such a small tax base and they're a big tax-paying entity,
they're going to have a big
footprint. That's a big deal
in our county. And then, but we also have the Hampton Inn that's going to open here soon. That's a big benefit to the taxpayers of the county.
Mm-hmm.
We have another retail business. I don't know that the name has been publicly announced yet, but it was brought up at the town council meeting last week. They've got a client and coming in to open a new building and establish a new retail business in our community.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's other things that we're looking at. And so there are some positive things. There's a number of developments in the works right now. Up in Lakeside, there's two, I believe they're both 40 acres apiece, one near where you're at, and mm-hmm. then one in another location of Lakeside. There's what's, it's been called different things. Ski Alley, a lot of people knew it as, but now it's being called the Cliffs more recently. And
oh,
that's
that right?
The project up by the dam.
Yeah.
Where they've carved into the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I know that was controversial for some folks, what was going on up there. I mean, they were doing what they were allowed to do, obviously, but
right.
Some people didn't like that. But that's going to be a huge development in our county. And these are things that are progressing and moving forward. The Toscana condos that have famously sat along the highway Riverside there, Riverside Drive, empty for all these years, they're going to be, I think it's four of them that are going to be put on the market here very shortly. I mean, they've been working and working, and those are going to be ready to be put on the market. And now that developer's coming in with plans for moving that project on forward. So there's a lot of positive signs happening in our county. We just have to deal with our financial house and get that in order. So that we can be better stewards of the taxpayers' money. I mean, that's our job at the end of the day. We're entrusted to do that work and deal with the funds of the taxpayers. So, but I think there's reason for optimism in La Paz County. I think it's a lot of things are going really well, and we should be proud of that.
That's really, really good stuff. I was going to mention, you know, I took multiple questions ahead of this from, you know, listeners and readers of Parker Live. And, you know, I think over the course of our conversation, we've gotten to almost all of them. All those new cop cars that you guys have, you know, that's a big problem.
Yeah, you notice they're black and white.
And they're not the sheriff's office.
They're not the sheriff's.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
And the expensive uniforms that I force the guys to take.
Yeah, those are very expensive,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes. In reality, we let the deputies decide what they would like to look like. And the pants that they decided on are about $40 cheaper than the pants that they were buying before. So
Yeah. Hey, when it says little things, when it says rabies fund, is that actually, does that just mean the animal control department? Is that what that really means on that sheet?
It was part of a program.
Okay.
The names on those programs, those lines refer to the programs that were served.
Okay.
That brings up another point, though, that I'm glad that was said, because I also want to thank. You know, we're talking about the county employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get so much benefit from volunteer workers in our county. And when you mention rabies, you know, the ARF group.
Oh, yeah.
There are people that work at that animal shelter for free daily and then invest their own resources into it because they care about the animals, right? But, I mean, that's a responsibility of the county. But it's one that can oftentimes get set on a back burner. But we have volunteers backfilling for us and doing a lot of things, not just there, but in other places of the county, too. So they really deserve our gratitude, because that's a huge benefit for us.
I took a call before we came on the air from George Nault, who said two things probably never done in government. He says one is the hospital tax. Years ago, we got together on that as a community, he said, and got the hospital done. The tax came in. 3 years later, it went out, and he saw that as a really good, you know, sort of like the community stepping up to do what it needed to do in a tough time. And then, you know, it went away. It was a limited thing with a sunset clause. And he said, stand together when times are tough. That's what the community needs to do. It was a very positive call. He said, united we stand. Too much sales tax drives away business. We need to bring in more business. He doesn't mind paying his property tax to contribute to whatever's going on at the county. So he says, you know, basically it's time to come together as a community in a positive way. And so I think no one can really disagree with that. Was there anything else that we didn't get to? I'm trying to think, Bagby, anything that you can think of?
I already forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that it's important that most people can't go to those meetings that you guys have. And so it's a time, you know, it's good to have you guys in here, because we can let a lot more people know what's going on, and they can hear it from the horse's mouth and hear what the thoughts really are.
I think Deuce has something.
No,
on that
to your
one.
Point, I'm glad you mentioned that. One of the things that we're looking forward to doing, I'm not going to put a timeline on it, because again, we're dealing with a lot of things. But we talked about the need for technology and moving into the 21st century. Some of the equipment is actually already in place, but we need to enhance it to be able to do what we want to do. But I'm looking forward, again, it hasn't been decided by the board, but I'm really pushing and looking forward to setting our boardroom up where we can Skype our stream our meetings.
That would be
really
good.
And then archive them. So people can watch from anywhere in the county and watch them live, see what's going on. And then if they don't get to watch it at that time, they can watch it at their leisure and we watch it. And
it's especially suited to a county like this, which is huge geographically. I mean, people can be an hour away from that meeting and not be able to get over for it. So
again, we want people to know what's going on. So we want to do whatever we can in that regard. The one other thing I want, and I debated throughout our conversation whether I was going to say this or not, but you know, I don't want to single out.
You couldn't help yourself.
Well, I don't want to single out departments, but I don't know what it is about our golf course. But I've had a number of people in the 2 months I've been there make comments about the golf course and why do we have that cash draining, cash sucking thing here in our county when we're broke. The golf course actually does quite well and not only pays its own way, but generates funds above its expenses. So and it's a real asset to our community because it brings in people that create spinoff revenue. So
it brings money in?
Yeah.
Okay. And what about the La Paz County Park and the other parks? Do you know what their situation is as entities?
They've actually turned their programs around. They're in the black.
Okay.
They're actually generating revenues now.
As a whole or as each individual park?
As a whole.
As a whole.
From what we can tell. And I think the thought that I would leave people with is we have two different approaches. We have one approach that's dealing with today, right here and now. And that's very short-term things that we can do to turn the tide so that we provide more stability in our operation. But the real solution is going to be a long-term plan for us to go through, and it's going to be about 5 years for us to plan out what needs to be done and then get it all done. And there's an order of operations to it. You can't do the things that you would do in year five because you've got to build the framework for that to exist in years two and three.
Definitely.
So we've got a lot of very smart people helping us pull that all together.
And it would be okay, for example, if, say, the La Paz County Park here north of Parker made money that subsidized in some ways some of the smaller parks, wouldn't it? That would be okay. We'd be happy if the parks as a whole were in the black.
Well, the board has a tough position.
I'm not saying that I know that that's true or not. You
right.
know, but
hey, but you're headed down the right track there. The board has a tough decision to make when it comes to what services are going to be provided to the community here. And there are times when you'll have a program that runs in the red, but you still want to provide it, like Little League or whatever it is. So there are decisions that have to be made. And the real trick to it is making sure the board has all of the details about the entire organization so they understand how that's the decision's going to affect
everything.
The county.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Got a message before we pull off from La Paz County recorder Shelley Baker, who said the department heads, or at least the elected ones, had been frustrated with being kept in the dark and only hearing rumors. And she says, we're very happy that the truth is out. Kudos to Deuce and the current board for finally bringing it out in the open. She says, I feel very good about the avenue they are taking, and I am impressed with Robert Smith and his team and the efforts they are making. I have had my interview and believe it went very well. So, you know, I guess you have more of those going on, department meetings and that sort of thing?
We have another week of one-on-ones with the departments to get through them all.
And they're going okay?
They are, and we're going to take all of those ideas that they are the authors of and roll that into a report that goes to the board.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be the basis of, that'll be the beginning of our plan on what it is that we need to be doing to get things back into the shape that they need to be in so we're operating effectively.
Okay, excellent. That's it. Guys, thanks so much. Sheriff Bill Risen, Captain Kurt Bagby, Supervisor Deuce Miner, and Interim County Administrator Robert Smith. I'm sure we'll hear more from you guys soon on what's going on.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.